As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
My Seven Chakras, episode 364.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jayakumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you experience effortless healing, awakening, and abundance. In today's episode, we go deep into discussions about your kundalini energy, your chakras, your nadis, breathwork, and so much more. So you cannot afford to miss even a single minute of this session. But before diving in, I'd like to remind you that I have recently released a 24-page PDF document that outlines some of my favorite ways to raise my vibrations and feel much better almost immediately. To get your free download, go to mysevenchakras.com/feel-better-now. That's mysevenchakras.com/feel-better-now. All right, so let's bring on our special guest for today, Dr. Susan Shumsky. So Dr. Shumsky is a highly respected spiritual teacher, award-winning author, and founder of Divine Revelation, a unique field-proven technology for contacting the divine presence, hearing and testing the inner voice, and receiving clear divine guidance. For over two decades, her mentor was Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, founder of Transcendental Meditation and guru of the Beatles. She served on Maharishi's personal staff for 6 years. So, Susan, welcome to our show, and are you ready to inspire?
I am ready to inspire, AJ. Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. It's super excited to connect with you. And I've got so many topics that I want to hopefully explore in today's episode. But before we begin, what is that one inspirational quote that is on your mind right now? And how do you sort of keep that in your mind or live up to it on a day-to-day basis?
Well, when you said inspirational quote, what popped into my mind is, I am the resurrection and the life. And I suppose the reason why that popped into my mind is because that is a seed statement that has to do with our immortal soul, that we are an immortal being, and that by saying affirmations such as, I am the resurrection and the life, we are infusing those qualities into our being. And, you know, affirmations have so much power. So that's one of the really main things that I teach is ask and it shall be given unto you. And asking means using affirmative statements.
Thanks a lot for sharing. Action Tribe, if you're listening to this right now, remember that there's power in the process of asking, but you need to affirm your requests and make sure that you assume that you already have it, because there is power in the I am. So, lovely quote. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. So, Susan, let's go back to the start. Talk to us about your childhood. What was it like growing up in your household?
I grew up in quite a conservative Jewish household. But then it was the 60s, you know, and I became a hippie. And I went to live in the San Francisco Bay Area. And those of us who were hippies at that time, who were flower children, we were seeking spiritual awakening. We were seeking nirvana. And I was reading everything I could lay my hands on, Buddhist scriptures, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, The Way of Zen by Alan Watts, and other books by Alan Watts. And in his books, he said that you need to find a meditation guide. Well, in Berkeley, California in 1966, you didn't exactly go to the Yellow Pages and open up and find a meditation guide or anything remotely similar to that. So I asked a friend, well, how do I find this meditation guide? And he said, well, have you ever tried to meditate on your own? I said, okay, well, I'll give it a shot. So I lay down on my bed. That's how clueless I was. I didn't even know that you're supposed to sit up when you meditate. I lay in my bed and I sort of prayed for, asked for a quote unquote meditation. And immediately I was propelled into this ecstatic state. I could feel this rush or cord of energy rushing from the tips of my toes all the way up to the top of my head. And I felt like I was plugged into this cosmic electric socket, but in a most ecstatic way. Hmm. And I thought, well, I guess this is meditation. I didn't know any better. And little did I know that not only did I have my first meditation, but also Kundalini awakening all at the same time. Without drugs, without any stimulants or anything. And at the time, that was the thing, was to do LSD. But this was without anything. And I had this amazing experience. And I wanted to repeat that, or at least I still wanted to reach nirvana. Mm-hmm. Eventually, a friend took me to the Transcendental Meditation Center. Mm-hmm. I saw the picture of the guru on the wall, and I could feel this energy that was just washing over me. Coming from his eyes, I just felt this amazing, uplifting spiritual energy. And I realized this is where I could learn real meditation. So I did. Mm-hmm. And I actually spent over 2 decades in the ashrams of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and 6 years on his personal staff.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing and building that picture for us about how you got started with spirituality and meditation. So a couple of questions over here. So firstly, when you got started, what within you wanted to sort of experience nirvana? What do you feel that was? And then B, as you look back, what do you feel made you have that Kundalini experience at the first time itself, right? There are some people who, you know, practice and strive for maybe months or even years together. So what made you have that Kundalini experience in your first attempt? And before that, if you could tell us what within you wanted to seek out and find out the truth or have that nirvana experience?
I think it had to be something from past lives, because certainly there was nothing in my lifetime. I was not raised by people who had any interest in meditation or yoga, or although actually those things didn't even exist in America when I was born. I mean, there had been maybe Vivekananda and Yogananda were the only people who ever visited the West and tried to teach people yoga or anything like that. But it certainly had nothing to do with my family. They still have no interest in meditation or anything about yoga or holistic anything. I was raised by a surgeon, AMA all the way. No belief in any alternative medicine. That was quackery, according to my father. So a totally different kind of childhood. But I think there was a longing from many past lives of wanting to reach a higher consciousness. And that really was affirmed when I went to become a hippie in San Francisco, because Timothy Leary and Richard Alpert, they had written a book called The Psychedelic Experience, which was based upon the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And in their books and their book and their teachings, they were telling us turn on, tune in, and drop out. And they were telling us that LSD was the way that you would get to nirvana. It certainly didn't work out for me. I mean, I actually had a psychotic break from taking LSD. I had horrible experience, but then I did have some nirvana kind of experiences on LSD and on marijuana, which I was also taking.
Wonderful.
But I wanted to learn how to do that without drugs. So, and then when I had the experience, why did I have that experience right away? Mm-hmm. Was it the longing, or was it just I had had that similar experience in past lives, and so it was familiar to me, and there I just went into that state. So I think it has to do with past lives.
Yeah, so that provides us some context, right? And our listeners might also be able to resonate with this, that we don't start with a clean slate, right? We always have impressions or yearnings or longings from previous lifetimes that often have an influence in this lifetime. So talk to us about your very first mystical, spiritual encounter. What was it like?
Well, I guess my first mystical encounter was when I met Maharishi. Okay. And we drove down to Los Angeles from San Francisco area, and we were meeting him. He was going to give a lecture. So we went to the airport to meet and greet him. And he was walking between two corridors of people that were doing pranams and saying, Jai Gurudev, Jai Gurudev. And so he was smiling and laughing and giggling at all these people. And he had this amazing energy. He was so powerful. He had this charisma that was unlike anything I had ever experienced before. And also he exuded this divine love all around him. His energy field was just filled with love. Mm-hmm. So he was giggling and laughing and cooing at all the people down the road, down the corridor. And then he comes to me and he stops and he looks me up and down and up and down and up and down. And then he gives me a kind of a sneer. And as I offered the flowers to him that I had picked, wildflowers I had picked on the way down. Everyone else had beautiful flowers that they got in flower shops. But I was dressed like a crazy hippie. I had my wild and frizzy hair. I had hairy underarms and legs, and my junk store dress, my funky junk store dress, my hippie beads, my leather sandals that were very, very funky and kind of nailed together with these funky nails. I looked ridiculous. Anyway, he looks me up and down and up and down, and then he gives me this kind of disdain. And I'm like, well, what did I do wrong? You know, and I was just devastated. So, you know, he was immediately starting to work on my ego from the first moment I met him. I call it open ego surgery. That's what Indian gurus do. They work on you to try to help you to become a better version of yourself. And how they do that is through various seesaw emotional gymnastics that they put you through. Praise, blame, praise, put down. Uplift, put down, uplift, put down. It's like a seesaw and you're going through this intense emotions. I didn't really experience that fully until I got onto his staff and worked on his staff for 6 years. And not only, I wasn't the only person that experienced this, all the people on staff experienced this. And I just dubbed that open ego surgery.
Got it. So for the benefit of our listeners, why do you feel there's a need to break down the ego?
You know, it's really traditional in India. Indian spiritual masters, they talk about that you have to become egoless in order to experience God. And in a sense, it's true. The parts of the ego that are negative, that make you feel unworthy, that make you doubt yourself, the parts of your ego that make you feel weak and that make you feel less than, those are the things that need to go. The parts of your ego that are involved with self-confidence and efficiency and being competent and all of that, those are the parts of your ego that are good, that you want to keep. But what the spiritual master does is helps you to realize yourself and helps you to express yourself. It helps you to express who you truly are and to develop parts of yourself that you didn't know you could develop. When I lived with Maharishi for those 6 years, it's amazing how much I changed and how much I developed in very practical ways. I learned how to do so many things because of the fact that he would make me redo everything over and over and over and over and over. He did that with everyone, by the way. He would drive everyone nuts, having us redo everything over and over and over until it became perfect. And it never was. He always criticized, no matter what it was never good enough.
Got it.
It was really crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a great topic because I'm always curious about shifting my identity towards my true self. So what is an aspect about yourself that you felt that you could not change before, but then with the guidance of Maharishi, you ended up changing? I'm just trying to get an idea, because there are aspects of myself that I want to change as well. So what were they in your case, or what was it in your case?
I think I was actually kind of a know-it-all.
Okay.
I was a know-it-all. And kind of, I looked down on other people quite a bit. Mm. And I think that that was something that he really helped me with, to try to tone that down.
Yeah.
Realize that other people add value too, not just me.
Got it. Okay. So then he helped you look into that aspect of your life, shine some light in those areas.
Got it.
Thanks a lot for sharing. And then where in this quest, where in this story did you then discover the knowledge of the chakras? Where did that happen?
Well, that's very interesting, because Maharishi never taught anything about chakras.
Okay.
He was not a Kundalini yoga teacher. He taught this
a
transcendental meditation, which is only involved with using a mantra.
Okay.
But when I started writing books, after I left, I actually was in Maharishi's various ashrams for over 2 decades. And then I learned another form of meditation that's called divine revelation. And once I began to do that, I began to write books. The first book was called Divine Revelation. That came out in 1996. And then I started writing more books. And then I got a different publisher. My first book was published by Simon & Schuster. Later, I got a different publisher, which was called New Page Books at the time. Now it's part of Red Wheel Wiser. But that publisher asked me to write a book about chakras.
Okay.
It was the last thing I would ever want to write about. But because of the fact that they asked me to write the book, suddenly I got interested in the topic, and I went back to the ancient scriptures, the tantric and Vedic scriptures of India, to find the most authentic information I could find out about the subject. So I delved deep into that topic, and I was amazed at what I was able to find about the chakra system, that actually there were scriptures about it, there were ancient texts about it, and then I could write about that in this book, which originally was called Exploring Chakras. So that was the original title. And I drew pictures, because I'm an artist. I drew pictures of the deities and the mandalas, everything, the yantras of the chakras and all of that. And I made it into a really great book that was so unique.
Yeah.
That information just could not be found anywhere else unless you went back to the ancient scriptures. You could not find that information. It certainly wasn't in any of the New Age books at all. Right. And now my latest book, The Big Book of Chakras and Chakra Healing, it's like an encyclopedia of the chakras. It's so vast, the knowledge that's in there. You know, it's everything you ever wanted to know about chakras and everything you didn't want to know about chakras, but you're going to learn it anyway because it's in the book. So it's filled. Right. To the brim with all the information about the 7 major chakras and 7 other chakras that are edified in the ancient scriptures, most of which are in your head, by the way, in your brain or above your head. So it's a very mystical book and very esoteric. Mm. And it's about how the universe gets created and goes back into Maha Pralaya at the end of the cycle of creation, and how this human system has the same kind of cycle coming from the Bindu point, then all of the elements and all the tattvas creating this body and this physicality. And then at the end of your cycle of creation, going back to the Bindu, to the singularity or Bindu point. It's very far out. What can I say?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I love the fact that you've not held back. You talk about the deities and you talk about the Sanskrit terms, and you talk about the philosophy behind of everything. And that's very important. Like you've alluded to a lot of times, unless you go deep into the scriptures, the tantric scriptures, as well as the Vedic scriptures, you won't find this information, this esoteric information along with practical information as well. So, going back to the time where you were deep, you were perusing through these scriptures, what about the chakra knowledge sort of got you hooked? At what point did you get hooked onto it?
I really got hooked when I realized that as above, so below. When I realized that Maha Pralaya was was related to Laya, absorption of the elements at the end when you're going into spiritual enlightenment. That really got me hooked. And I certainly haven't seen that anywhere else, but I do do reveal that in the book in a very profound way. And it's extremely meaningful to me.
Got it. Let's talk about Kundalini energy now. For those who are new to this particular term, what is Kundalini energy or Kundalini Shakti?
So all we have to do is start with the basic thing. And what is prana?
Yep.
So prana is life force energy. It is what is keeping you alive. It's said in the Upanishads that when prana is in the body, that is what is defined as life. And when prana leaves the body, that is what is defined as death. So prana is what's keeping you alive. It gives you motion. It gives you heat. And by the way, prana is the same thing as qi in China and ki in Japan. So prana is flowing through a subtle sheath or kosha. It's called kosha in Sanskrit, a subtle part of your energy body or your auric field, whatever you want to call it. It's the invisible part of you, which pervades, permeates, and surrounds your physical body. And one of those layers called the pranamaya kosha or the vital energy body, that is the body or the sheath through which the nadi, meaning the conduits of subtle energy, the nadi and the also known as meridian, that the prana flows through those conduits of energy. So those are throughout your energy field, and they're giving vital energy to every part of your body. They're regulating your body. They're keeping you alive. But they're invisible, and you can't measure them. You can't find them. If you dissect a corpse, you're not going to find a nadi or a chakra anywhere. But when many nadi come together in a plexus, that's called a chakra. So chakra means wheel, and people really need to learn how to pronounce the word because everyone's calling them chakras, and there's no such word as chakra in the English language or the Sanskrit language. And this is a Sanskrit word. I don't even pronounce it correctly. AJ, you can pronounce it correctly because you know how to pronounce Sanskrit. But, you know, at least chakra, you know, let's try it. At least that's close enough. Mm. So the chakra are wheels because they have a hub and they have spokes of energy, radiations of energy that come from the hub. And every chakra is associated with one of the endocrine glands. It's associated with it. Certain functions in your physical body. And as I said, it's keeping you alive. So prana is this life force energy. Kundalini is a specific kind of prana. It's a spiritual energy. And it is often called the mystic coil or the serpent power. And it actually, the word kundalini means curled up energy. So it's a curled up, coiled up energy that's at the base of your spine in something called root bulb, which is right below your root chakra. Mm. And it's curled up there and it's asleep in average individuals. Everybody who's listening to this podcast today, your kundalini has awakened to some degree, or you would not even be interested in this topic. You would not be listening to this if you didn't have an awakened kundalini already. So, hey, that's great news. Hey, your kundalini is awakened to some degree. So as a kundalini wakes up, it goes through a specific nadi, remember, those are the conduits of pranic energy. So kundalini goes up through sushumna nadi, it's called sushumna nadi, which is, it goes through the center of your spinal canal.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And when it flows upwards through your body, it actually goes all the way up to the top of your head. And when it does, you experience what you might call nirvana. It goes up to the, actually, it's called nirvana chakra at the top of your, right under the top of your skull. So that's when Kundalini Shakti, meaning the female energy, unites with the male energy, the Shiva energy. So the uniting of male and female aspects of your individuality creates spiritual awakening. And as Kundalini goes up through Sushumna, it's opening and awakening your chakras as well.
Mm. Wonderful. Thanks a lot for explaining that to us. So it's the ultimate uniting of the female aspects of your being with your masculine aspects, thereby leading to a spiritual awakening. And like you pointed out, as it's going from chakra to chakra, it's clearing out any blockages. It's bringing about a new level of consciousness within you, and ultimately it reaches the crown at the top of your head. So thanks a lot for sharing this. Could you highlight or maybe explain to us some of the benefits of activating our Kundalini Shakti from your point of view or from your experience?
Well,
what happens as a result?
Not only do you develop your clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient abilities, which are your, I call them superpowers, or subtle sensory perception, supersensory perception. Not only that, but also you gain greater well-being, health, vitality, energy, and even more, you have greater charisma, more magnetic attraction, more charisma, which makes you more successful. So there's many, many benefits to awakening Kundalini, or don't necessarily even have to think about Kundalini. Just practicing meditation will take you into a elevated state and it will refine your prana, by the way. When you have more refined prana, it's like in the middle of meditation, at the deepest part of meditation, it's like you're not breathing at all. Breath is suspended. The breath is never really suspended, but it's like the breath becomes so subtle that you don't notice that you're breathing. It's so, so quiet and so, so subtle. And when you get into these subtle states of awareness, you experience higher consciousness. You experience bliss, great joy and happiness within. That's a fantastic benefit. I mean, happiness, what could be greater than experiencing inner peace and happiness? And that's what comes when you experience subtler levels of pranic energy flowing through your system.
Oh, that's wonderfully explained. Thanks a lot for letting us know, because I'm sure that all of our listeners would like to experience more bliss, more joy, more happiness in their everyday life. And through your aura, I could sense that you, Susan, are full of bliss. You're always full of joy and you're laughing from time to time, which is amazing, which shows that, you know, your chakras are aligned and your prana is flowing through your Sushumna properly. So thanks a lot for letting us know. In talking about the aura, you've written in your book that when Kundalini rises through our chakras, this armor begins to crumble. So firstly, talk to us about our aura. Maybe what role does it play in our life, and why does it crumble when our Kundalini rises from the root to the crown?
Well, we have different layers of our auric field.
Yeah.
There's what we call pancha kosha, meaning five sheaths.
Mm-hmm.
We have the physical body, and that's called the food sheath. the Anamaya Kosha. Mm-hmm. It's called the food sheath because it is made of food, sustained by food, and becomes food for something else after we're gone. And then there is the Pranamaya Kosha, which is the pranic or vital energy body. Mm-hmm. And that is the body through which the nadi, through which prana flows through the nadi. So that is made up of prana. That is what's keeping you alive, giving you motion, giving you heat, giving you energy. Then there's the Manomaya Kosha, which is your mental body, mental emotional body. And that is your sensory perception is in that body. Mm-hmm. People think that the senses are in your physical body, but they're not. They're actually in your mental body. They're in a different sheath. They're not in the physical sheath. We can demonstrate that by the fact that when somebody has a near-death experience, often they will leave their body and they'll maybe be up on the ceiling or someplace and they'll be watching somebody, they'll be watching the doctors trying to revive them. They'll be looking at their own body down there. Well, what is looking at the body? It's certainly not the eyes of the person. It's not your eyes that you're seeing yourself through. You're seeing yourself through your subtle senses, which are in your mental body, the Manomaya Kosha. And then the next sheath is called the Vijnanamaya Kosha. And the Vijnanamaya Kosha is your ego and intellect body. And then there is the final fifth sheath, which is your causal body, otherwise known as the Anandamaya Kosha or blissful sheath. So there's all these sheaths. And as you gain spiritual awakening, through awakening of Kundalini or through other practices, you don't have to actually, like I said, you don't have to be focused on Kundalini at all to attain spiritual awakening. But as you do that, what happens is these bodies become more clarified, like the mental body, for example, which may be filled with all kinds of negative emotions and thoughts and feelings that don't serve you. They start to fade away. They start to crumble. They start to disappear. And you become more filled with light. Your entire energy field or auric field becomes more filled with light and you become lighter. You become more exalted and you become a more beauteous divine being who realizes who you really are. You realize your true self. And I think what you're speaking of is the absorption when you say crumbling. You're talking about the laya, which means, as I said before, we begin with a bindu point. Mm-hmm. Singularity. And then from that, all of these, what we call elements or tattvas, get created eventually from ether to air to fire to water to earth. All the different elements get created. And that's how we become physical beings. But then at the end of our evolutionary cycle, all of these elements get absorbed and we go back into the singularity. We become the oneness, the wholeness. We realize ourselves as oneness and wholeness. We realize ourselves as beingness, unbounded awareness, and no longer identify ourselves as this physical being. So that is really the definition of spiritual enlightenment, is to realize who we really are, which is pure consciousness, pure awareness.
That's wonderful. I love how you explain that. And I can see how the concept of the bindu is so beautiful because it explains life, as it were, at the Big Bang point and then going back again to the Big Bang point. And in doing so, when we experience meditation, when the ego is broken down, that happiness that results when we realize that we are one with everything around us. I think that's why we experience bliss. We feel happy that even though we might not have achieved that goal or those goals, or not where we are financially or relationship wise, we are complete just the way we are, where we are, because we are this observer, right?
Absolutely, AJ. Yeah. The observer, the witness to all that's going on. You don't have control over what happens to you. These are all karmic results from the past. You have really no control over them. But what you do have control over is becoming or realizing, I mean, who you really are. And in that way, you no longer have this kind of ego attachment to things around you, so that you're happier. That's all. You live in greater happiness and inner peace, even though all the vicissitudes of life are going on in your life and around you. You remain in a calm and peaceful state as much as possible. And that comes from practice, from doing your practices, your spiritual practice of meditation and other spiritual practices.
And speaking about practices, you write about the bandhas in your book. So what are the bandhas and how do they help with really channeling the energy of the kundalini within our body?
Well, bandhas are probably, out of any other yogic practice, bandhas are maybe the most profound for awakening kundalini. Mm-hmm. Although pranayama is also very, very good for awakening kundalini. But pranayama means breathing exercises. But the bandhas are muscular locks. Mm-hmm. And when you use these muscular locks, they help to force kundalini to rise up the sushumna nadi, to rise up through the central canal of your body. So there is the Jalandhara bandha, which is the neck lock, where you place your chin on the sternal notch. There is the Uddiyana bandha, which is abdominal lock, where the muscles are going upwards into the thorax area. And there's the Mula bandha, which is where you are squeezing the muscles of the anus and the genitals. So when you do these bandhas, it does help to awaken kundalini. They're very powerful. And they really make you feel good doing these practices. And also, I recommend pranayama, meaning breathing exercises. And that as long as you do the breathing exercises easily and effortlessly without straining, they're also very good to do and will help to awaken kundalini.
That's wonderful. So recently for my personal life, I'm experiencing a little bit of hair fall and hair thinning these days. So what I do in the morning is I'm doing all these different inversion techniques so that I can bring some more blood flow to my hair, thereby nourishing my scalp. And obviously, I've noticed so many side effects, wonderful side effects also of this practice. And and the other thing that I've recently discovered, which I'm doing consciously, is the Ashwini Mudra, which is connected in a way to the Mula Bandha, right? Basically constricting the muscles in the root. And there are so many numerous, and you've written about that also in your book, right?
Yes, Ashwini Mudra is in my book and all the other various bandhas. And there's a lot of practices that are related in the book, the Big Book of Chakras and Chakra Healing that I recommend. And also another one of my books called Exploring Meditation has some great exercises, yoga kind of exercises that are not well known. I call them couch potato yoga.
Okay.
yoga sukshma vyayama, which is yoga for your subtle body. And I discuss that in my book, Exploring Chakras, and I teach it in that book. So my books really have so many practical applications because there's tons of practices in all of my books, including a book called Awaken Your Third Eye, a book called The Power of Auras. Mm-hmm. All of these books just filled with interesting practices to help you to develop your subtle sensory perception and to help you to awaken your spiritual self, to realize your spiritual self and use that in a practical way in your everyday life.
Beautiful. And you spoke about breath work or pranayama a short while back, right? So talk to us about how this yogic breathing or controlling our breath or breathing in a certain way, how does it influence the chakras and help us heal? If you can give us an overview of that.
Well, prana, the life force energy prana, is in the breath, it's in the air, it's in water, it's in food, and it is the life force energy. So if you can increase prana in your energy field, if you increase the flow of prana, then you're going to have more energy, become more charismatic, and be healthier. So pranayama, I guess you pronounce it correctly, is a technique for increasing the prana through the nostrils, going into your physical body. And when you increase prana in your physical body, you become healthier. So you know, I really recommend that people learn how to do some breathing exercises. They're very, very helpful.
Well, absolutely. I recently, in fact, started doing more breath work, especially in the evening. And I found that is really, really useful to me. I immediately feel a physiological state difference. I feel much more better. Oh, yeah. I feel much more recharged. And also when doing Kumbhaka, which is like the breath control, right? Holding your breath for mm-hmm. long times. Recently, there was a Nobel Prize winner, right, that did some research into how elevated levels of carbon dioxide in the body can have numerous benefits for us. And so it's funny how something that has been done for thousands of years, now science is discovering that, you know, too much of oxygen is not really good for you. And that if there's, for a limited period of time, if there's a slightly heightened level of carbon dioxide, it can actually be good for the body, isn't it?
That's very interesting.
Yeah. They found that this phenomena can lead to proliferation of stem cells as well as other benefits. When my nose is blocked, I usually hold my breath and it has the effect of clearing my nasal channels almost immediately. So I'm really fascinated and want to learn more about all the different types of breath work that there is.
Mm-hmm. So there's two nadi besides the Sushumna nadi that are very important. One is called Ida and one is called Pingala. Mm-hmm. The Ida nadi is associated with the left nostril and the female aspect of your being. And the Pingala is associated with your right nostril and the male aspect of your being. And naturally, human beings, always breath is flowing more through one nostril than the other.
Right.
And every 110 minutes, approximately, the nostrils switch. In other words, at some parts of our day, we are more in touch with our feminine side, more relaxed, more in touch with our, what we call the parasympathetic part of our autonomic nervous system, mm-hmm. Which is digesting food and doing internal activities. And then at other times, we are more in touch with the male side of our being, which is associated with the sympathetic aspect of the autonomic nervous system, and which is involved with greater activity, with heat, with more aggressive activity, with fight and flight reaction, adrenaline, and that sort of thing. So the autonomic nervous system is associated with our two nostrils. Mm-hmm. So when we do pranayama, what we're doing is we're balancing this autonomic nervous system. And as a result of that, we become more balanced. Our polarities become more balanced. The male and female within us becomes more balanced. We become more balanced in all aspects of life when we practice, for example, alternating breathing exercise that goes from one nostril to the other, which you can learn how to do. It's very simple to do. The important thing about pranayama is not to strain. It's very important to be easy and effortless with it, and not, you can actually damage yourself if you do these breathing exercises too forcefully. It's good. And if you're going to use Kumbhaka, if you're going to use retention of breath, it's important to build up to that and not try to do it all at once and not try to force yourself into holding the breath for long periods of time or forcing the air in and out of the nostrils. Better to take it easy with pranayama.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing that, Susan. And for listeners who are listening right now, you know, I would highly recommend trying out or checking out or learning how to do the alternative nostril breathing, because I find, especially if I'm in a meeting or maybe if I'm going into doing something that's important or some creative work, or if I just need to relax in the evening, just 2 minutes or 3 minutes of that alternative nostril breathing feels so great. It feels so relaxing. It's not esoteric. It's not complex. It's very practical. So make sure you check that out. Now, Susan, let's talk about the third eye now, because any discussion about the chakras would be incomplete without this particular chakra. So what role does the third eye play in the evolution of a person's life or even humanity overall?
Yeah. So with our two eyes, we see this beautiful, wondrous world through our senses, including our two eyes. But there's a third eye, and the third eye is located in the center of your head. It's in the pineal gland area. And that particular chakra is the sixth chakra, and it is associated with spiritual illumination. It is the eye of illumination. It is the eye of seeing things that are hidden from view, the eye of clairvoyance, clairaudience, and clairsentience. It's a way for you to experience your true divine nature. Every one of our seven major chakras is associated with a planet. And the sixth chakra, or third eye chakra, is associated with the planet Jupiter. And the planet Jupiter, in Sanskrit, the word for Jupiter, is guru. So that planet, which is the guru, the inner guru, is there seated in your third eye. So it is your inner teacher. It is your inner guru. It's your intuition. It is your insight. It's the place from which you can derive spiritual knowledge. It's the place where you can get any and every question in the universe answered when you ask spirit, when you ask the inner guru to give you the answer to any question. You will receive the answer when you develop that clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient ability, which is located there in your third eye. So my books can help you do that. I've written several books about developing intuition. One is called Awaken Your Divine Intuition. Another is called Awaken Your Third Eye. And my very latest book is called Third Eye Meditations. And the Third Eye Meditations book is just filled with guided meditations. And guided meditations, by their very nature, help you to awaken your third eye. Because what you're doing when you do a guided meditation is you're listening to the instructions. And as you're listening to the instructions, you are receiving instructions that will help you to awaken your inner vision, because you're seeing things as you're listening. You're seeing the things that you're experiencing. So guided meditation, first of all, is totally easy and effortless. You don't have to do anything. It's the do nothing program. You just listen to you actually either read the words on the page, or you can record those words onto a recording device, is what I recommend. And then you close your eyes and listen to your own voice guiding you into the meditation. Or you can get it as an audiobook. Third Eye Meditations is available as an audiobook. And then you just close your eyes and follow the instructions. You just listen, and it will guide you step by step by step through the meditative process. That helps you develop your third eye. But I have to say that my book, Awaken Your Third Eye, has tons of techniques to help you develop your clairvoyant, clairsentient, and clairaudient abilities. Tons of techniques to help you open your third eye. And also another book, The Power of Auras, which specifically helps you to develop your ability to read auras, to be able to see clairvoyantly. That's got tons of other methods in it. So all my books are very practical. They're not just about airy-fairy. They're not airy-fairy at all, actually. They're all very practical.
So Action Tribe, when the motivational speaker Tony Robbins said, "I'm not your guru," he was probably right, because as we're learning today, the guru is within you, and it is in your third eye. So Susan, if the third eye is so powerful and it's so important in our evolution, why isn't it active, or why is it dormant in most human beings today?
So the reason why our third eye is dormant, not activated, is because we're not taught how to activate it in school. We're not trained in this ability that anybody can learn. You can learn intuition. You can learn to develop clairvoyance, clairaudience, and clairsentience. It's a teachable method. It's a teachable skill. And we haven't been taught it because we are now in our phase of science-based. Everything is science, 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 science. Science is our God right now. So as science continues to be our deity, we worship at the temple of science, and we're not learning how to develop our spiritual self. We're not learning how to develop our natural abilities of supersensory perception.
That definitely helps clarify a lot of things. And I guess the solution is for schools and educational institutions to start introducing spiritual practices or intuitive practice or practices like yoga and breathing at a younger age, so that the kids can then use their gifts that they already have to awaken at a younger age, which I'm sure is going to be easier than if someone decides to do much later down the line. So thanks a lot for sharing. Now, Susan, from an energetic standpoint, in your opinion, how is the energy of this brand new decade different from the last decade that ended in 2019? Do you experience a shift? Do you feel there's a difference?
I don't experience any kind of energetic shift with these arbitrary numbers that we give to years.
Right.
However, in the last 50 years, huge changes have taken place on this planet.
Yeah.
In the 20th century, which most of you weren't even there, in the 20th century, way back, this planet was a bloodbath, frankly. Mm. We had World War I, where 41 million people were murdered. We had World War II, where 71 million people were murdered. We had thousands of soldiers coming back home in body bags. The Vietnam War, not another bloodbath, not as many people killed, but the entire century was basically world wars, conflict, misery, bloodbath.
Mm-hmm.
What do we have now in the 21st century? Well, we certainly don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's a different world. Way back in the 20th century, middle of the 20th century, there was no yoga, there was no mantra, there was no martial arts, there was no organic foods. You would go to the grocery store and you'd find meat, potatoes. The only fresh foods you would find in the grocery store would be potatoes, tomatoes, oranges, apples, and bananas.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't even find fresh vegetables. They didn't exist. Yeah. I know this is hard for people to believe, but you know, I remember, I'm that old. So back then, there were no esoteric bookstores. There were two esoteric bookstores in the entire country, on the East Coast and the West Coast. No bookstores anywhere else had any information about yoga, about mantra, about kundalini, anything. Nothing, no esoteric information whatsoever. And you certainly were not going to learn it in school, that's for sure. Back then, people were very uptight. They were very, very uptight. And they weren't relaxed. They were always wearing a mask. They had to live up to this certain way of being and certain very strict rules about roles between men and women. There was a lot of prejudice against ethnic groups. It was a different world. Today, the world is very, very different, especially with the internet, proliferation of metaphysical knowledge, a show like AJ's show that we're listening to right now, available for anyone and everyone, at least in places other than North Korea and maybe other places where you can't get information because of the state. But in the free world, certainly it's all there. So it's a different world, and I'm really glad that it is, because happily, some wonderful teachers from the East came to the West in the 20th century, and they began to teach meditation. They began to teach yogic practices. They began to awaken people. And as a result of that, for the last 50 years, people have been awakening, and they continue to awaken. And more and more and more and more people are getting interested in self-development, in spiritual practices, in something other than orthodox religions. Alternative religions are becoming more interesting to people.
Action Tribe, are you finding it hard to de-stress and unwind in the midst of this crazy pandemic? Come join us for a soothing, relaxing breathwork session online on Zoom. Now, I do these sessions for our paid members twice a week, and I've received so many powerful testimonials from people who've received a lot of support, comfort, and healing from these sessions. And to show you just how powerful these yogic breathwork practices are, every month I do a breathwork intro workshop for people who'd like to give this a shot. In the past, people have paid anywhere between $10 to $20 for a drop-in, but for a short while, I've decided to make these sessions available for just 50 cents a ticket. And these sessions are live, but you just pay 50 cents. So if you'd like to learn how to calm your mind, relax your nervous system, and experience deep states of bliss using your breath from the comfort of your home, visit my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. That's my7chakras.com/breathworkintro. I'll see you soon.
People are talking about, oh, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. They're beginning to say that. 10 to 14%, depending on where you read the statistics, somewhere between 10 and 14% of people in the United States claim that they meditate. Mm-hmm. It's a different world. What can I say?
Yes. So Action Tribe, if you're listening to this right now, especially if you're in 2020, then it's a good time to be alive. And thanks a lot for putting that into our perspective. I hope you enjoyed today's session so far, and you now have some insights or some thoughts into how you can awaken that force within you and heal your life. It is now time to start paying attention to that faint voice within, and time to listen to your heart, what it's telling you. Even though sometimes it might not seem logical at first, you must lean into your hunch and trust your path, because if you have faith, it'll never lead you astray. Because as Albert Einstein once said, I believe in intuitions and inspirations. I sometimes feel that I'm right. I do not know that I am. So trust your intuition. And with that being said, it is now time for our wisdom round, after which we're going to continue our conversation and go deeper for our members. Now, to remind you, this extended conversation is one of the numerous bonuses available to members of the Action Tribe Energy Circle community. To learn more, go to my7chakras.com/join. That's my7chakras.com/join. So let's begin the wisdom round, which includes four questions, rapid fire style. So, Susan, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
Oh, that I've ever received? One day, Maharishi came up to me and handed me a flower, and he said to me, don't look to anyone. When you don't look to anyone, then everyone will look to you. I didn't quite understand what he was saying at the time, but eventually I realized that he wasn't just talking about anyone. He was also talking about himself. In other words, don't look to me as being your God. Look to yourself, realize yourself, and depend on yourself rather than on people and things around you.
Got it. And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who is living or dead, who would it be?
First one that popped into my mind was Jesus. I think it would be interesting for me to spend some time with him. He was a pretty interesting character. He was an iconoclast. Yeah. He was a rebel.
Yeah,
and he emphasized the idea that we can create our own reality through our words, especially through our words, and that we have all the power within us. Greater things than this shall you do, is what he said.
And what is it one thing you do in the morning or maybe in the evening before you sleep that has improved the quality of your life?
Meditation is what has improved the quality of my life. No matter when I do it, meditation is the panacea of all ills. It is the thing that will bring you back to your center. It's the thing that will help you to stay youthful. Mm-hmm. It's the thing that will help you stay healthy and strong. And it is the thing that connects you to spirit and brings you joy, bliss consciousness, fulfillment, contentment. It is just the best thing. Meditation is the best thing.
And if you could recommend one book for our listeners today, what would it be?
Bhagavad Gita would be a good book for everyone to read and to absorb, because it has all the teachings of yoga in a very small volume, and it will teach you about the master-disciple relationship as well, because Krishna did his open ego surgery on Arjuna during that particular dialogue. And if you can read between the lines, you'll understand that. But it has all the teachings of the ages right there in the Bhagavad Gita.
Thanks for sharing. Action Tribe, would you like to receive one book for free? Because Audible.com is offering Action Tribe one free audio book download with a free 30-day trial. In case you don't know, Audible is into audiobooks, which means that you are listening to the book rather than reading the book. And in most cases, the author himself or herself reads out the book to you. It's a great experience to try it out and get your first audiobook for free. Go to my7chakras.com/freebook. That's my7chakras.com/freebook. So Susan, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing all those stories and pieces of wisdom and things to watch out for and ancient esoteric wisdom with us. What is that one thing that you're grateful for today? And how can people find more about you and get a hold of your books?
I am so grateful that I learned this special knowledge called divine revelation, which at any time, all I need to do is just call upon divine beings, call upon God, and ask for whatever it is that I want, whatever spiritual experience that I want, and that immediately the divine beings of light would come to me and lift me out of any negative state, any discord, and bring me right back to center, right back to my divine beingness, that at any time I can call upon these beauteous beings of light and return to God realization, return to the direct contact and communication with God. And I am so grateful that I have that I know how to do that, and that I can share that with other people, that I can teach others how to do that as well.
And how do we find you online, as well as get a hold of your books?
My website is drsusan.org. That's drsusan.org. And also my other website, divinetravels.com. That's plural on the travels, divinetravels.com. And my books are available anywhere that you purchase books. Obviously, probably the least expensive place to purchase them is at Amazon. All my books are available on all platforms and also at your local bookstore. And if it's not there, you can ask them to get it in for you. So I have 18 books in print, 34 foreign editions, and I've won 31 book awards.
18 books is a lot. I mean, I know that people take months and months to write one book, but you've written 18 books. And of course, you've got other works, you do workshops, you've got courses. So actually, try to make sure that you learn more about Dr. Susan Shumsky at her website. We'll link her website as well as her book on the show notes. Are you available on Instagram, Susan?
Yes. I have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all of that as well.
Great. So Action Tribe, if you're on Instagram, then take a screenshot of this episode and tag me on Instagram so that I can share your story with Susan and with our entire community. My handle is @my7chakras. That's @my7chakras. We are now going to move into our bonus extended session for our Energy Circle members. If you'd like to upgrade, the link is in the episode show notes. And if not, no worries. Have a great week ahead and we will chat soon.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my7chakras.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.